Mic check, mic check. Seeing if we can rock out with our cocks out with me in my bed. No mic stand, no studio, no guest. Welcome back to another Solo Dolo episode. Ba-da-da-da. Two very important things to note. The first is, excuse me, my dancehall air horn impression is garbage. It's really bad. And this is not the first episode that I've subjected you guys to listening to my impression of it either. So like, I'm really sorry. I guess I should go watch a YouTube tutorial or maybe just like look in the mirror, acknowledge the color of my skin and realize maybe that's not an impression that I should even be doing in the first place. Secondly, my mother told me the other day that she thought my voice was shrill. This came up because I was admitting to her that I was like maybe contemplating becoming a cam girl. God bless my mother. She deserves every single trophy available in the, where do you even buy a trophy? Like the toy store, the like sports manufacturing store? Anyway, wherever you can get a trophy, she deserves to wipe out the entire inventory. So we were talking about how I was contemplating becoming a cam girl, but that I wanted to be the kind of cam girl who actually interacted with the people who were in her room. So, you know, I was like, okay, I think I need to maybe wear a wig and like switch my voice up a little bit so that all the conservative trolls can't put two and two together between that and Instagram. And I realized that lowering my voice down to something like this, which doesn't sound like I'm imitating a man, but is just kind of a more seductive, maybe slightly more black lung register, was more along the lines of the character that I was looking to embody. So I introduced that voice to my mom, and she was like, oh, that voice is much better than your regular voice. I was like, okay, mom, thank you so much for giving birth to me. I'm going to go fuck myself now. Thanks for the feedback. Ah, a crush. What kind of images does a crush evoke? Like butterflies in the stomach and flying through the air and spring optimism. Walking down the street with your head in the clouds. But you know what? My crushes have never been like that. My crushes have always been, you know, vomit-inducing, like nausea-inducing, panic-inducing, existential dread-inducing, just all-encompassing veils of fear and self-doubt. And this is like over people that I hadn't necessarily even like forged any sort of a real relationship with. And I cannot be the only person who's fallen into this situation where oftentimes having distance from somebody, having space, whether that's physical or emotional or both, versus actually being in the beginning stages of dating somebody or getting to know somebody and forging that intimacy with them. But oftentimes the space gives you so much more room to project. And in projecting, you can work yourself into a stupor, because you can convince yourself that all of these fantasies that you've had about this person are reality. Versus if you're actually spending a lot of time with them, you know, it's harder to avoid the cold hard truth that's right in front of you. But because of this, I have a long history with having ultra intense crushes. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about it, and I wanted to say that my first crush was on my first serious boyfriend before we started dating. We were best friends for 6 years and I was like seriously in love with him. But it was before that. I went to the same camp for 4 years and had a crush on the same boy all 4 years. And for the first 2 years, he did not know I was alive. And then by year three, we had a lot of mutual friends and I was, you know, not intolerable to look at. And he was a musician, obviously, but I didn't know any better at the time. Leave me alone. But I really was obsessed with him summer after summer. And finally, because the universe is evil, he came around at like year five when we had stopped going to camp. Totally missed his window. After we had like lost the opportunity to spend whole summers together, he decided that I was super hot and tried to sext me before boys were at the age of having any degree of finesse with sexting. But yeah, that must have been when I was, what, 12 to 16. And that was the first time I experienced having a crush that was so deep and so intense that it felt like you knew the person and were missing something in your life, not having them in it, despite the fact that I really knew nothing about this dude at all. But on the flip side of that, sometimes you meet someone and your visceral reaction to them, your connection with them, your pull towards them is so strong that you form a crush almost totally against your will and totally out of the gate. And even if you don't have the opportunity to ever expand upon that crush, maybe you don't see the person again or you hook up once and it fizzles. When you get a taste of that almost like mystical connection, that taste of like, I really understand what people are saying now when they say that some people are just meant for each other. I don't even necessarily mean emotionally. I just mean in that immediate physical chemical reaction. It's really special. And that is something that I have experienced quite a few times and very distinctly remember what it was like for the first time meeting each one of those people. But there was one situation in particular that really stuck with me that I thought I would share. So I was living in London 5 years ago. My God, cannot believe it has been that long. 5 years ago, I was living there and it was my first night out. I think I had been there maybe for 24 hours. I was out with my friends and we met this group of guys. I was blackout drunk, so I don't remember the actual meeting very well, but I guess my friend did all the talking and I slurred in the corner. Actually, no, you know what I was doing? I was making out with another guy. Yeah, I was making out with a really hot and at the time semi-famous artist who I guess I ditched to go off with this other group. But yeah, I don't remember very many tiny details about the night, but I do remember that my group of friends and his group of friends ended up at this other bar. And he and I just started talking. And right away, both of us were like, what? Like just the way that we looked at each other, the way that we thought the other person looked and how we felt. And we just started making out in the middle of the dance floor. And yeah, I was drunk and sloppy. And yeah, this was the second person of the night. But I will never forget how surprised I was by how strong that connection felt so fast. Then we ended up going out on a double date with his friend and my friend who had also made out that night. And I thought it would be an interesting test of, was I just, you know, shit-faced? And I got there and I saw him and right away I was like, no, I wasn't. I mean, I was, but my instincts were right. And we proceeded to have a great date with these other two people. And I didn't see him again after that. There were a lot of reasons why. They're pretty juicy, but I'm not going to share them because I need to have a smidgen of self-respect and boundaries. Mostly just the classic wrong place, wrong time stuff. But I didn't see him again until the end of my semester, which was 5 months. And it stuck with me so badly, man. I couldn't shake it. I did a lot of serial dating that semester. That was kind of where the origin of my serial dating past problem came from. But I well knew that every person I was going out with after that was just me seeking a replacement from him. And everywhere I went, I would hope that I would run into him. I think I maybe lingered around his workplace neighborhood a little longer than I should have. And everything I did, these experiences that I was having with my best friend in the world that would, of course, mean more to us than anybody else, just largely because no one has the same weird interest that we do. But I couldn't do anything without thinking, oh my God, so-and-so would love this, or this would be so much better if so-and-so were here, or how nice would this be if I was holding so-and-so's hand? And I felt so stupid the entire time that I was feeling like this, because we had hung out twice. And I didn't know anything about him. I didn't know anything about his family. I didn't know anything about the way that he conducted himself in his day-to-day life. But something about his energy just gelled well with mine. And I look back on London, and still, it was the happiest time in my life. But I have the strongest images in my head of being so depressed the whole time I was there. Not because I was unhappy, but because there was this insatiable feeling of something being missing. I ended up seeing him again at the end of the semester, and we had a little bit of a drunken rekindling. But the most interesting part of this was I went back to London a year later and had all of these great expectations of truly, like, meaningfully rekindling with him, which I did. And then we fell out and apart again. And fast forward to now, and it's 5 fucking years later, and this dude is, like, still on my radar. And he still reaches out to me. He actually reached out to me the other day and was like, oh, I think I'm coming to New York. And I was like, this is laughable for so many reasons. It's laughable that he's such a fuckhead who comes in and out of my life. It's laughable that I'm still entertaining it in any capacity. It's laughable that we only hung out an amount of times that I can count on one hand in the past 5 years. And I still have all these unanswered questions and all of these what ifs in my head. And the fact that it's been 5 years, the fact that such a small number of interactions could have carried me 5 years of thinking to myself, maybe this person is not my one, but one of my ones. It's so bizarre. And in another example that is not nearly as long-lasting and significantly less psychotic, I have a similar situation with the friend of the guy that I used to date that I called out in my last Solo Dolo episode. He and I also hung out about 3 times, and this is different because my ex-fling was always around. So I never held hands with this person. I never made out with this person. I never had anything remotely sexual with this person except for, you know, exchanged compliments and a slight amount of banter. I mean, I knew absolutely nothing about this person. I know absolutely nothing about this person aside from some outrageous and not necessarily positive sex stories that we shared. But, you know, we also shared the same sense of humor and this, like, bizarre level of mutual bodily comfort out of the gate. Like, yeah, there's a huge chance that this whole thing could be a total projection on my end. And the reason he hasn't made a real move on me is probably because he thinks I'm the biggest joke and not because it's socially acceptable because of his friend or whatever. But, you know, at first I was like, okay, and expired with guy number one that I was seeing. And now I'm back to square one. And I know that this guy, his friend, thinks I'm hot. And so I was like, all right, maybe this could be like an ego space filler situation. But I have not been able to kick it for the past couple of months. And the worst part is he's listed as a mutual friend of people who come up for me on Raya. So I'm legitimately tempted to, like, cheekily direct request him. But alas, that would be the world's thirstiest move. And that is not our MO here at Health Assault HQ. Yeah, okay, Allie, so it's like, let's very obviously shout him out on your podcast instead. Brilliant. But yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's all about what goes down within your interactions with a person. I really don't know that feelings have much to do with who a person actually is. You know, I think that when it comes to relationships, it is kind of important to look at them as a business, and you have to weigh the pros and cons and see, well, am I willing to, you know, form a math equation with this other person and produce this agreeable answer? But when it comes to just, you know, cold hard crushes, I think it's all about gut instinct. It's all about pheromones and the way someone smells and the way that they look at you. And it really is so wild that sometimes that crush can feel much stronger than anything you feel for somebody who's about to become your real life partner. But then sometimes you got to do a little extra work to distinguish between a crush and ego death. You know, like, have you ever noticed that, of course, when someone stops showing interest in you, you end up liking them 17 times more? It's something that guys are very good at doing, you know, like making girls obsess over them the second that they stop being nice to them. Girls are terrible at doing that to boys. But that's a very real thing, is that when you think you have something in your pocket and all of a sudden it's not there anymore and your ego takes a blow, you're convinced that the person who just abandoned you was, like, the absolute love of your life. And sometimes they may actually be. But oftentimes that's us taking a huge L and not actually being obsessed with somebody the way that we think we are? And this is a question that I am debating when it comes to the ex-fling, the friend of the friend that I'm talking about now. He and I definitely had a connection, a mutual one, but I asked myself so many questions about how much I actually liked him when we were in the throes of our fling. And now that we're not in the fling anymore, I still think about him quite a bit, but I wonder if it's because I'm still adjusting to having gone from being, you know, the apple of someone's eye to like, yeah, not being in their life anymore, or if it's like me actually realizing that somebody who could have been good for me got away. And I'm like 98% sure that it's door one, but it's still interesting to think about. On the topic of that ex-fling though, we used to get into these like half-joking fights about his insane engagement with this one girl's social media. Like, it was so roaringly obvious that he had a really big digital crush on her. I say digital because I'm not sure that they actually met. I'm sure now they have, but at the time, I don't think that they had ever actually met. I think that they just had a lot of mutual friends and like had been flirting online. And he tried to tell me that he only liked her shit because he knew how much of her self-esteem depended on engagement, and he wanted to be supportive since now they were friendly. So, yeah, he was correct in her assessment of her insecurity, right? Like, this chick lives and breathes Instagram, but he was undeniably thirsting. Holy shit. He was a camel and she was like a tiny puddle of water in the fucking desert. Like, he was all over her. So while generally I believe that you should not pay any attention to anyone's social media activity because it tells you nothing about their life or their feelings, if your man is smashing like on like all of one bitch's photos and her tweets, you can almost guarantee he's trying to get after it in real life. My God, I truly, genuinely hope those two social climb their way on top of each other's bodies and enjoy the ride. God bless. But this is a really good example of a very real problem because social media and dating apps allow all of us to develop these crushes on people we don't know based on what they look like in pictures and what their superficial interests seem to be. I'm not even talking about bikini models, like a Brianna Holly or, you know, like an actor, like a Noah Centineo. I'm talking about Dan from Hinge, who has pics of himself playing tennis or going to Disneyland or flying in a jet or whatever your interests seem to be that he seems to share. It's so problematic. And this is one of the reasons why I'm so anti-dating app, because unless you know exactly what you're looking for in a particular moment in time, or, you know, what you're looking for is to have sex for the sake of sex and nothing else, we have no concept of what is real and what is meaningful and what is totally superficial when social media and dating apps come into play. Logic is like the number one romance killer. I'm not talking about the rapper, although that's true too. I'm talking about like using logic. But sometimes it's very important to tap into it, to save yourself from destructive or repetitive patterns, or just being completely delusional. So the biggest question is, right, it's not, how do I know if I have a crush? It's, how the fuck do I get over my crush? It's, how do I feel okay having a crush? It's, how do I go about my days without feeling like I'm swallowing my own tongue? And in an attempt to find answers to these existential questions, I put a poll on my Instagram stories asking you guys to send in your best and worst and cutest and nastiest crush stories. And oh my God, did y'all come through? Not in the way that I thought you were going to at all. Y'all were wildin'. wilding out. I stand so hard for the fact that you guys share this shit with me, especially when I'm trying to solicit like innocent cosh stories and you think that, oh, this is a safe space. I'm just going to dump my guts out. So I took all the stories and I put them into three categories, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I thought that I would read out some of the responses that I got so you all can feel better about your sick fuck lives. So here is the good. Not necessarily meaning that it's actually good, but in comparison to the overall vibe, the overall vibe that was going on in this box, yeah, these were the good ones. Quote, it's been 84 years since I've had a crush. So, you 21 little bish, you're telling me you haven't had a crush since before you were even in the womb? I am very jealous. Next. I love talking to my boyfriend about all my crushes and his. We bond over them. Okay, like I actually see how this could be hot. But then, of course, my perverted mind wants to know, like, do you guys masturbate together when talking about your other crushes? Are you allowed to say your crush's name in bed? Do you role play as your crushes? Oh my God, can you imagine if like a boyfriend was role playing just as another guy that both of them knew? Ha! Love that. Always falling for cute waiters in restaurants happens 3 times a week. Ugh, girl or boy. Any person who can balance that many dishes on a tray clearly has an excellent sense of balance in their life. And that kind of stability is so hot to me. Ugh, tip them. Tip them extra. And then ask them to give you their tip, if you catch my drift. Next, I'm a mentor and I have a crush on my mentee. We have a contract, not easy, LMAO. Wow, this sounds very Shakespearean. That is hot to my theater nerd ass. Next, my current BF is my best friend's ex and her current BF is his best friend. So ... LOL. Call MTV, babe. You guys have the makings of a reality show. Next, a guy I have hate fucked for 2 years is my crush. Oh my God. Okay, so this isn't technically good, but I bet the sex is. And that's definitely why I put this on the good list to begin with. Love a hate fuck. Now we move on to the bad. First up, he loves wearing women's underwear, but he's funny and cute otherwise. Baby, so like, I know it's 2019 and gender and sexuality are spectrums and everything in the world is fluid, but unless he's trying to go down on you while wearing the women's underwear, I'm not sure he's really into your type. Next, my Taurus crush is moving slowly AF. All right, well, you all know how I feel about astrology at this point. I think that this guy's just not that into you. Next, dudes exclusively from other continents after knowing them for a couple days. Ha! Clearly ditto. Other bad submissions include always into taken guys, usually into married men, my husband's best friend for almost 10 years, my best friend's ex-boyfriend's brother. Oh my God, that was a mouthful. My best friend's ex-boyfriend's brother. Also, that doesn't seem like it would be off limits. I mean, maybe I'm not the best person to listen to, but just saying. And then the last one, a friend's boyfriend who I almost asked out a week before they got together. He still likes me, though. Okay, wait, but if he likes you, wouldn't he have asked you out? Like, why her and not you? That's what I really need to know. And we conclude this big bad section with somebody saying, I'm only interested in emotionally unavailable guys. How can I break this cycle? SOS. Look, I know that as human beings, we all want what we can't have. That's just like one of those things about human nature that is a fact, for better or for worse. But once you start to cultivate self-esteem, you start to think to yourself, why would I want to spend time with somebody who doesn't want to spend time with me? And I've been feeling this really heavily recently. You know, there's this corny ass quote that's like, we accept the love we think we deserve. And it's really easy to brush that off as some like PBS style shit. But it's actually true. Because now that I've landed in a situation where work's good and I believe in the work that I'm making and I feel good and I think I look good, I'm like, I don't want to get anywhere near someone who's not treating me at the level that I treat myself. Like, that's just embarrassing to spend time with somebody who's lesser than. And I think that, you know, it's actually a very simple answer. Like, you want to stop falling for emotionally unavailable men, you need to figure out how to make yourself feel better by you for you. And I don't really think anyone has any business trying to get involved with somebody if they are looking for that person to fill all sorts of existential voids. Like, you should be looking to join forces with someone where you can meet them halfway. You know, you're not their nanny and they're not your nanny or shrink, God forbid. You know, so you want to stop going for those types of people? Just stop. Just break the habit. Done. So I'm rereading the ugly list that I put together, but there's only one submission to this list that really matters. And it's the girl who wrote in saying that she has a crush on a cocaine addicted, discharged Army Ranger who's also a literal nut farmer. This is like extremely hot to me. Like, I'm like moist thinking about it. And this is clearly why I'm still in therapy. I hope me reading these submissions to you makes you feel a little bit better about your own neuroses and bad decisions. But look, you guys, I'm a romantic. I read too many books and watch too many movies. And I think that even when it's unhealthy or tragic, there's something so fun about getting to experience this feeling. Like, to me, this is the essence of being human, is not being able to figure out why you're so attached to somebody that you met once, or being in love with your best friend who doesn't see you like that for 5 years until one day they wake up and they do. It's boring to go through life not allowing yourself to get emotionally attached to people. I know plenty of people who, for the sake of self-preservation, won't let themselves fall into that kind of trap. And yeah, it blasts your ego. And yeah, it could be embarrassing to retell those stories. But life isn't about money. It's not about a big house and cars. It's about cultivating experiences and learning as much about what the fuck it means to be a human being as humanly possible. And to me, this kind of uncertainty and confusion, but also like warm, happy feeling in your belly, that's humanity at its finest. So to conclude this delightful half hour of ranting, I'm going to answer a couple questions that you guys submitted. But before I do, y'all, come on. Like, so many of these things that you're submitting are just like basic human instinct. Or if you go back to my previous point about cultivating self-esteem, we would not be here. You would not be writing to a dysfunctional girl living in her parents' house in downtown Manhattan looking for answers. Like, listen to this. Some girl goes, "What do I do if I'm convinced literally a guy doesn't like me, but he's flirty?" Babe, the answer is he ain't shit. Trust your gut and move on. Every guy is flirty to every single girl because he's like subconsciously trying to spread his seed or whatever. Don't take it so seriously. Another one goes, "How do you get over a crush who you've never talked to?" Okay, this makes me feel like a little bit better about me being obsessed with these guys that I only met a couple of times, because you cannot have a legit crush on someone you don't know. Like, somebody that you've never interacted with, spoken to. In my opinion, this is just completely a series of projections, which is exactly what like and love is. But you need to think to yourself, what is it about this person that's making you think that they could fill all your existential voids? Like, why them? And go talk to them. Why haven't you spoken to this person? Unless it's like the Pope, who's surrounded by too much security and you can't get through and actually say a word to him. Like, you have no reason not to go and break the ice. Take a chance. Next question. "Just started seeing a guy I met online 2 weeks ago, but IDK, when to have the talk." What is this talk you speak of? Like the birds and the bees, a TED talk, a lecture from your angry parents. But seriously, stop with this pressure of needing to have a certain talk at a certain time and like listening to all of these rules and societal norms. Y'all met 2 weeks ago. If you take a step back and envision yourself as like a teeny, tiny little dot in the world, you realize that not only are you totally insignificant, but 2 weeks is totally insignificant in the grand scheme of things. And it's really hard for millennials to remember that because everything moves so fast, everything changes every day, so much information is being thrown at us, and we're lonely on top of all that. But you must remember that in the grand scheme, 2 weeks is not a long time. Enjoy this for what it is. Enjoy getting to know somebody. Let your relationship blossom like the flower that it is, okay? And then lastly, someone says, girl, I need you. I've got a crush on my trainer. How do I flirt? Oh, yikes. Unless this man or woman is seriously tapped into their animal instincts and enjoys the smell of undeodorized pheromones emanating from your sweaty crotch, I don't know if the gym is the best place to try to get your Mac on. But if you do feel like the vibe is reciprocated, how about like calmly asking them out to coffee or something low pressure and not sexually aggressive. So don't channel Samantha from Sex and the City having her trainer shave a lightning bolt into her vagina, okay? But it's also, it's important to note that it is a trainer's job to make you feel good about yourself. You know, it's service. So sometimes you need to be careful not to mistake your trainer doing their job for your trainer wanting something more. But what do you have to lose? Unless your trainer's married, you know, what do you have to lose? So again, go for it. And that is just about all of my own voice that I can handle hearing this week, you guys. Seems like a good place to stop. Let me know what you think about my opinions. Do you think that they're disgustingly wrong and that I'm severely uneducated? Amazing. I love a little bit of a quarrel. Email that to healthishellhotline@gmail.com. Feel free to email any follow-up questions as well. If there's enough of a response, I can do another episode with the same theme. If you guys want to submit more of your horror stories or, completely illogical fangirling. And then if you have any recommendations for future themed episodes that you would want to hear or burning topics that you'd like discussed. Also, as usual, please, please, please don't make me beg. Post a screenshot of this episode to your stories. Share it with friends that you think would be interested in what I have to say or have something positive to contribute to our community. I would so much rather be able to grow this podcast through word of mouth than stupid targeted paid advertising. We are better than that, everyone. Leave a rating on iTunes, just a couple of sentences about what you like. Smash that 5-star and keep doing your thing. I'm so grateful. I am so excited to show you what we have in store next week when we finally move into our studio space and have the voicemail live that you guys can call into. I'm really, really excited to see where we are going from here. I think it is going to be all the way down into the depths of hell. Love you, angels. Talk soon. Bye.